Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday show since our new format, but it's not our first Sunday show. But since we went covering the NFL, obviously, you know, unless we did a show Sunday morning, it's kind of tough to do a Sunday show because the games haven't been played yet. Thus, we don't do Sunday or Monday. We usually wait till Tuesday night. But since we're talking about the NFL draft and my two esteemed co-hosts were so excited to get on the air and talk draft, and let's, you know, what we think of what went on in the draft and how it's going to impact the 2013 season. We just couldn't wait till Tuesday. We couldn't wait till Monday. So here we are Sunday night. The Madden Voice returns to talk NFL draft. It is me, Commissioner T. I am here with you live, not Memorex. Y'all remember that commercial? Am I dating myself? All right, forget about it. Forget about it. Forget about it. Let's bring on my co-host. This guy... sometimes you use words to describe somebody and they're just not enough, right? This is a guy I've known for, what are we, in 2013 now? I think I've known him now close to 7 years. We've never met face-to-face, yet I consider him a dear, dear friend. He has his PhD, thus we call him Doctor. He was EAFL, which was the greatest online league ever created, and I got a comment about that shortly, but anyway, greatest online Madden football league ever created, and he was the first winner of that Super Bowl, and the guy has passion about football, if you can match, big Chicago Bears fan. For all you new listeners joining us for the first time, we know him affectionately as Dr. Train. Welcome to the Madden Voice.
What up, T? Appreciate the intro, man. I can never get tired of it.
Well, you know, when we don't do shows every week, and I know we pick up a lot of new listeners, sometimes I feel like I need to embellish a little bit so people are like, who is this guy? Who is this Train guy? You know, Dr. Train. I mean, who is he? And you know what? He really is a doctor.
Absolutely.
So, and let's bring on the other co-host. This guy has been playing Madden since Madden was created. Annually, he is one of the top Madden players out there. He will give you lessons, cost you a couple of bucks, but it might be worth it if you like the game. Big, big, huge, huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And, you know, another guy who loves his football. And, you know, he's a co-host. And maybe this upcoming season we can finally get him to host an episode of the Madden Voice. But in the meantime, as a co-host, we know him as K-Star. Welcome to the Madden Voice.
So, fellas, happy to be here
okay.
with you guys on this Sunday evening. This is rare. We never really do Sunday evening shows, but here we are.
And here we are. Sunday night, NFL draft, new season. I mean, in a way, even though we kind of, you know, the way we've always done the Madden Voices, the Super Bowl show is kind of it. That's the end of the season because it's the Super Bowl, and then the next show after that starts our new season. But maybe we'll start something. Maybe we'll in the future it'll be when the draft kicks in, because really the draft is really kind of the kickoff of the 2013 season. So we are really underway now. And I like how they started off the draft with the clock, the countdown to the next Super Bowl. You know, how many days, hours, and minutes to the next Super Bowl. But let's not rush it because there's a lot of football and a lot to go on between now and then. But anyway, let me ask you guys quickly, if you had to pick, Train, we'll start with you. What was your biggest surprise of this NFL draft?
Ooh, biggest surprise of the NFL draft.
There was a lot of them, so, you know, we could probably all have three different ones, you know?
It was something that happened. There were two things that happened early on. One of them, I can't quite remember, and that's probably my biggest, but the one that just comes straight to mind, like, real quick, was E.J. Manuel going to Buffalo. And I was 16. I thought no quarterback would go first round. And I thought for sure any of those quarterbacks would be available after the first round. And considering that you could have gotten him early in the second round, unless someone told you that EJ's gonna be gone, I don't see why Buffalo made that pick.
Mm. Okay, K-Star. Biggest surprise?
Mine was Matt Barkley, the heralded USC quarterback who actually would have been a top 10 pick in NFL's draft from last year had he opted to go that route. Falling into the fourth round, I did not see that coming. When he fell to Philadelphia, who actually traded up to make that selection. I didn't see that coming. I don't think anyone did. For him to fall away to the fourth round was a little surprising, definitely for me.
Hmm. Yeah, I think both of you guys are picking great surprises. Mine is Geno Smith. I think he should have been a first-round selection. Going in the second round isn't horrible, but going to the Jets, I don't get that. I don't get that at all. I don't understand that pick at all. The Jets now have six quarterbacks on their roster. Six.
Wow.
Six.
Wow.
I don't get it. I mean, you just signed Michael Vick to another year. You still got Foles, whatever his name is. You got Dixon from the Steelers, who I believe used to play for Chip Kelly. And then you go get what many consider to be a blue chipper in Geno Smith. What are you doing? I don't get it. So that was my surprise. So I thought we would start with our own teams. We have three storied franchises that we represent. K-Star likes to talk about how the Steelers have more Super Bowl wins than any other team, and that's quite true. And, they've got six and eight appearances. And the Cowboys have five and eight appearances, and I believe the Bears have been there twice with one win. So, between our three teams, we're looking at 18 Super Bowls, which is pretty staggering. So, three very storied franchises. Let me start with Train again. Train, when you look at the Bears and their draft, what do you think? I mean, what are your thoughts? Do you like what you see? Are you optimistic, or are you sitting there scratching your head, or somewhere in the middle?
To be honest, and not even really being biased, I really can only be optimistic for the simple fact that, one, I don't really know college players. So as the closer you get to the draft, the more I try to listen to what the analysts have to say about, these players that are coming out, how many years or their college experience and, where they grade them. And just looking at what Chicago took, I mean, they pretty much addressed needs and depth that they needed. They drafted offensive linemen. They drafted linebackers. I think they got a GM and a cornerback. They didn't have a lot of picks, but those were the offensive line and the linebacker position were two real serious positions of need for Chicago. And they needed depth at the same time. Because we weren't able to hold over Urlacher. DJ Moore and the other guy, Anderson, are new. All we had was Briggs on the offensive line. That kind of just goes without saying. Color stayed on the ground. So what do you do in a draft where offensive linemen were deep choose from. No matter where you had to pick at from the draft, it was. I think they did okay. They addressed needs. So I can't really complain about that. I just can only just trust in Phil Emery and what he's doing.
Okay. K-Star, Steelers, what do you think?
Before this draft, I kept referencing, like, you know, let's before we talk about the Steelers and see how our draft goes, and let's go from there really to project what it could be for this upcoming season. And now that this draft has taken place, I am ecstatic. I really am, because what we did first, we drafted Jarvis Jones, who, if anyone's familiar with college football, especially the SEC, is aware that this guy, over the past 2 years, has led the SEC and the nation, coincidentally, in sacks. This guy wreaks havoc off the edge. And for the Steelers, it's really important to find some explosiveness off the edge, considering he lost James Harrison this past offseason. And really, James Harrison hasn't been quite effective the past two seasons due to injury and wear and tear, as it was anyway. So to get Jarvis Jones at 17th overall was really exciting. It's who I wanted the Steelers to get leading up to the draft. So I was pretty excited about his prospects and us might be able to get him, and we did. And we also addressed need. We got a running back in Le'Veon Bell, who went to Michigan State, and he was also a pretty productive running back behind a pretty average offensive line. If you guys watched his highlights or know anything about him, he's a guy who is pretty big bruiser, pretty great fit, and he was a workhorse at Michigan State. And the guy that he's drawing comparisons to is Steven Jackson, which, let me tell you, if you can land a Steven Jackson, especially in Pittsburgh, I'm very, very excited. But the Steelers draft was really strong. We addressed need. I feel like we reloaded, which is what we needed to do. Definitely reloaded my enthusiasm and optimism for this upcoming season, because I was a little apprehensive before it. But as far as the biggest steal for me, what the Steelers did in this draft was, in the third round, they actually got a little Mike Wallace clone, a guy named Marcus Wheaton from Oregon State, who actually ran a 4.36 40-yard dash, which is pretty quick and actually is almost identical to what Mike Wallace had run. So I'm very excited. And another note is that we actually drafted Landry Jones.
I was waiting for that one. That, to me, for your draft, just to kind of agree with you, I think you guys had a great draft. That, to me, was a great pick in the fourth round. I mean, considering you guys have really had backup issues, this kid can play some football. And this is a guy, if Ben goes out 4 or 5 games, I mean, he can keep it going for you guys. So I thought that was – I mean, I was pissed off, to be honest with you. I'm not wishing your team any good luck. What do you think this is, man? So when you do something good, I'm mad about it, man. I'm like, what? You know?
Oh, man.
But no, it was a great pickup for you guys. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. I thought it was a great pickup.
Absolutely. All enthusiasm for the Steelers draft is greatly encouraged. But, that was a tremendous pick just because, again, as you have pointed out, our backup issues for backup quarterback the past 2 seasons have been terrible. Our offense has been really bad. To get Landry Jones, who was excellent in college, and we actually traded up a bit to land this guy. It's really exciting for me and obviously for the Pittsburgh Steelers and all the fans out there, just because, again, if Ben does go down, like you had said, we have someone who I think will be quite capable, and I'm pretty excited about it. We had a very good draft, and I'm enthused again. I'm very excited about it.
All right. Well, you know, now we come to the Cowboys. I like you guys. I try to be optimistic. The Dallas Cowboys drafts over the years have gone up and down. I started off scratching my head with the first round pick, Travis Frederick, center out of Wisconsin. A solid player. And again, I'm not a huge college football person either, but certainly I listen to the pundits and I get on the internet and I do my reading and I go to YouTube and I watch some videos to try to get my own opinion. And I think this guy's a solid player, and I think he'll be a solid NFL center. Is that where I would go with my first pick, though? And the fact that we were at 18 and we traded with the 49ers to go back to 31 to pick up an extra third-round pick. I was like, okay, you know something I don't know. And then with that extra third-round pick, both third-round picks to me are marginal players. We'll see if they develop in anything, but I'm not really excited about Terrence Williams yet. That's third-round pick, wide receiver out of Baylor. I'm not excited about Wilcox, free safety, out of unheralded Georgia Southern. I am excited about Joseph Randall. To me, a steal in a fifth-round running back, and the Cowboys definitely needed a running back. And I am ecstatic about the second-round pick of Escobar. I think that guy's serious. I think he's going to be we had Martellus Bennett, who has shown flashes with the Cowboys and certainly with the Giants. Now I know he's gone. Is he a Bear now? Where did he go?
Oh, don't say it like that. Yes, he's a Bear now.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
I'm excited.
He's shown flashes. But I think this Escobar kid could be the real deal. And with, obviously we've got Jason Witten, but, in the NFL today, you need two good tight ends. So overall, I'd say the Cowboys did okay. But I wasn't thrilled with starting off with a center when you had four centers last year. Now, some would say, well, the fact that you had four means no one could hold the job. Well, they all got injured. So, you mean to tell me that all of these guys, Costa and Cook and all these guys, none of these guys are going to be healthy enough, and we can't take any of these guys and make them our guy for the next couple of years? We had to go draft one in the first round when we really needed someone to back up DeMarco Murray, who gets hurt all the time. We really needed the Cowboys let go of the secondary is decimated. Cornerbacks were solid, but safety's decimated, and we had a lot of injuries there. So and we don't have any pass rushers. We have no pass rushers outside of DeMarcus Ware. DeMarcus always has some of the highest sacks in the NFL, if not the highest, but the team always has the lowest because we don't have any pass rushers. Now, Anthony Spencer had a decent year last year, but traditionally he's not that guy. So, and now we're going to the Tampa 2. So now DeMarcus and Spencer are going to be playing defensive end. So where's the pressure going to be coming from? That's the question I'm asking. I don't know. Changing the defense. So I am concerned that we still have holes that needed to be filled. And I'm concerned about that. I'm very concerned about that. So anyway. All right. So I just get irritated. I get irritated. Hey, if anybody wants to call in and help me understand what the Cowboys did, 347-838-9525, 347-838-9525. You can certainly send us a tweet, the Madden Voice. Check out our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and / the Madden Voice, and we're right there. And or if you come online and you want to sit in the chat room and say hello, we're here. The Madden Voice is here. Quickly, before we get back to the draft, let me back up. I have been asked everywhere except on my very own show, and I don't mean it as if it's only my show, but I'm one of the owners along with these two gentlemen that are hosting with me. It's our show, but I have been asked everywhere what I thought of Romo's contract. And the place that I really should be talking about Romo's contract is right here on the Madden Voice. I'm going to surprise some of you with my thoughts on Romo's contract. Should Romo have been re-signed? Yes. Should he be the quarterback for the future? Yes. Is he worth $55 million guaranteed? No. Is he worth Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Joe Flacco now, Tom Brady money? No. I have to be honest and say I was completely perplexed by him getting Super Bowl champion quarterback with one playoff win in his 6 years as a starter. I don't see that. And I'm being honest. I'm sorry. I have defended this man on the show many times. I have said the Cowboys have bigger problems than just Tony Romo, and I mean that. However, when you cut a check in the same conversation as these four guys I just mentioned who have all won a Super Bowl, and Tony Romo has only won one playoff game as a starting quarterback, there's a problem there. And my fear now is Jerry – now my faith is unraveling, because now I'm wondering, what is Jerry Jones smoking? I don't get it. So you mean to tell me that if you had offered him he's getting $18 million next year. So if you had offered him $14 million and guaranteed him, you know, $35 million that he wouldn't have signed? I don't get why he had to get so much money. Now, I've read – all the stuff online about how the contract is structured, and it looks worse than it really is, and I get that, because how the NFL prorates and this, that, and the other, and this hits the cap this year, and that's prorated, and that hits the cap next year, and this, okay, I get it. And it's a huge contract, but it's only hitting the cap an extra couple of million dollars, so it was a great deal for the Cowboys, it was a great deal for Tony. Okay, I read all of that. Okay, but I'm Joe Q Public, right? And we do a show, as Dr. Train likes to say, for the fans, right? And so for us, we see numbers, right? We see numbers. And when we see 7 years, whatever it is, I don't have the contract in front of me, but I'm thinking it was somewhere 6-7 years, $120 million, somewhere like that, $55 million guaranteed. It's somewhere in that conversation, okay? That's what we see. And we compare it to Super Bowl-winning quarterbacks that are getting the same money, and this guy hasn't won a Super Bowl, has only won one play, hasn't been in a Super Bowl, hasn't been in a conference championship game, has only won one playoff game. And my last memory of him was throwing an interception right into the hands of the Redskins in a game that needed to get us into the playoffs last year. We won the division and got us in the playoffs. My recollection of my quarterback, Tony Romo, is 2 years in a row, your team needed to win the last game against a division rival to get into the playoffs, and each year the team has fallen short. And we reward that by paying him one of the probably the largest contract in Cowboys history and one of the largest contracts in NFL history. That's how we reward him for that. So where's his motivation to improve? Because he's a competitor? Well, we've seen this in the NFL for years. Guys get paid, right? Jamarcus Russell, $60 million quarterback contract, and now he's trying to get back in the NFL, and I wish him luck, but really? You know, we've seen this over and over again. Now my fear is, what's he got to work for now? I mean, you just said to him, and I'm sorry I'm taking a few minutes, but I needed to get this off my chest, so just work with me. But you said to him that you are the leader of an 8-8 team 2 years in a row that couldn't make the playoffs, and we're going to reward you by giving you over $100 million and half of that guaranteed. Thank you for your service, Mr. Romo. What's his motivation now? Because I can't stand to lose, and I've got to be the best. I'm sorry. To me, I'm sitting down and I'm saying, listen, man, you ain't getting it done. You're not getting it done. Yes, we've got problems all over this team, but let's look at you now. Now we're talking about your contract. Let's look at your performance now. Can we blame, you know, the offensive line? Absolutely. Can we blame the fact that running backs have been hurt? Dez has been hurt. Miles has been hurt. Absolutely. Can we look around and blame, you know, and point fingers? Absolutely. But if we're going to point fingers, why can't we start with you, the leader of the team? And why is it that we can find times where in critical moments we needed you to come through, and in too many times you didn't? Too many. Why reward that? I didn't say he shouldn't be on the team, and I didn't say don't pay him. Okay? You got to be competitive, pay him. But you're paying him like he's a top five NFL quarterback, and he's not. There was a time where I would argue that point. I'm not arguing that point anymore. He's not. So I am not happy with it. I don't agree with it. And I hope that I can sit here this time next year and say I'm wrong. God, we went and won a Super Bowl. Maybe they knew what they were doing because Tony came and played lights out all year. And, oh, my God, they should have gave him this money 3 years ago because I've never seen a quarterback play so well. Even K-Star said he played well. Even K-Star liked him. That's how good he played this year. We went in and we were 13-3 and we ran through the playoffs and we went into the Super Bowl. We played the Bears in a conference championship game and whooped up on them and played the Steelers in the Super Bowl and whooped up on them. And man, I got nothing to say. I'm happier than a pig in slop. Yes, he earned the money. Okay? But something tells me that I'm probably not going to be sitting here saying that this time next year. Just something tells me that I'm going to be sitting here saying, any quarterbacks available in the draft? Because I'm done with Tony. Now, Tony can prove me wrong. Now, I told you guys. I told you guys when he failed me against when he failed me against the Redskins that I could no longer defend him. Now he's got to earn back my respect. Because I defended him when everybody else was against him. Tony Homo and Oh No Romo and he's a choke artist. And I argued with you guys, well, mainly you, K-Star, and anybody that called in, Saint called in, all these people. No, it's not Romo. Well, guess what? I can't do it anymore. And now I'm pissed off at Jerry Jones because you've rewarded substandard performance with a $100 million contract and more guaranteed money than almost any quarterback out there. I don't get it. Yeah. I don't like it. I'm done. I done said my piece.
First of all, let me just real quick. I want everyone to be aware out there that, in case you're a new listener, this man, Chris T, has argued with me time and time again defending Tony Romo. So I just want to give a lot of respect to Chris T because a lot of people would just, you know, they might say, oh, well, I'm going to stop defending this person. They do this, they do that after this game. But he really meant it, clearly. Here we are. I didn't think I would ever hear this, the Tony Romo, semi-bashing that was, but it's all legitimate. And so to everyone out there listening, just know that you're not going to get hot and cold opinions. You're going to get opinions for experience. And, I mean, honestly, loyalty to a degree. Loyalty coin go so deep before eventually you get burned enough times where it's like, all right, I got it. Something's got to change. And I just think it's pretty cool that he kind of went that route. I mean, I didn't really expect it, honestly. I thought you were just going to be loyal and blind at the end, but here you are. Here you are. It's beautiful.
Okay. I agree with about 95% of what you said, T, with the exception that it's not Tony Romo's fault that they paid him that way. He's played the way he's played. He's better than average. He still is a good quarterback. He still is a quarterback that's capable. That I think is capable of still taking Dallas to a Super Bowl. We all know that Tony Romo is the only reason Dallas has fell short of making the playoffs and even making a run into the playoffs. He's not the only reason. My only statement is that Dallas organization is really digging a hole for that man because he's already got a bunch of scrutiny about him not, bringing it in, doing it in clutch and taking the team to the promised land. Now you pay him as if he's already done it. Now if he don't do it, we're going to be talking about Tony Romo every week this season. Good grief, man.
Let me say this. I'm not mad at Tony for getting paid. Go get paid, bro. Get your money.
I said
it's Jerry Jones. I'm upset with Jerry Jones because you're the owner, general manager, and you're cutting a check for hundreds plus million dollars to this guy who has not delivered. So that's my problem. And so yes. Okay, so I appreciate, the kudos. I've always prided myself on keeping it real. When I defend someone, it's because it's what I believe. It's not blind faith or blind loyalty. It's not because I'm a Cowboy fan, so the Cowboys can do no wrong. I'm honest with my stick, and I've defended Romo because I truly believed in Romo. Now my belief has been hurt. I don't have the same level of belief anymore. And so he's got to earn that back right now. Okay, and if the money means, that his family and his kids and his kids' kids are all set and now he can go out and focus and bring it to another level, then I will apologize this time next year if I see him performing at a high level. I give you guys an example. You know, Drew Brees is a top five quarterback. I don't care who you ask. I don't care who you talk to. If you don't have Drew Brees as a top five quarterback, you're smoking crack, okay, period. But we know the Saints were horrible last year, right? We know that they were horrible last year, okay? But Drew Brees still played at a very high level. He couldn't play at the same level because the team stunk. But you knew every game Drew Brees was going to go out there and throw three touchdowns, 350, 400 yards, and give them a chance to win. Not his fault that they had the worst defense statistically ever recorded in the NFL, okay? But we knew, why, if you watch any Saints game, any game that they played, you knew Drew Brees was giving them a chance to win because he's that damn good, okay? Well, that's all I want to see out of Tony Romo. If the team around you is failing, you still need to play at a high level, the highest level that you can perform at, and I don't see that all the time. And now with what happened in the Redskins game, I'm done. Now you got to earn it back. And that's it. Got to earn it back. So, enough about that. Just a few thoughts on the upcoming NFL schedule. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts, but just quickly, my very own Dallas Cowboys will play in the Hall of Fame game August 4th. You know, believe it or not, it's May's next week, so we've got June, July, August. I mean, we're a little more than 3 months away. So, not rushing it along because I love summer, but you know, a little more than 3 months away, and the Hall of Fame game will be kicking off in preseason, and then we're ready to roll. And they'll be playing the Miami Dolphins in that game. So the NFL kickoff will begin on Thursday, 8:30, and it is the Ravens against, I'm looking now, the Broncos.
At Denver.
Yes.
Denver.
Yes.
Which is an issue in itself.
Why?
Because the Super Bowl champions always open at home. But because of scheduling conflicts with the Baltimore Orioles,
not want
to go to the game, they have to play on the road at Denver, which is, wow.
Tragic.
You know, and I hate the Ravens, but that's BS. I feel bad. That's ridiculous.
And I didn't get a chance to look when this is, but I know it's, I want to say week 7, but I could be wrong. The Manning Bowl.
I'll check that out here.
Yeah, find that for me. That should be a pretty hyped game. The Mannings going up against each other once again. Thanksgiving Day, the Lions will host the Packers, and the Cowboys will host the Raiders. The night game will be the Ravens hosting the Steelers.
Yeah.
Who hosts the Steelers?
The Ravens.
Ravens, Steelers, Thanksgiving.
Ravens, Steelers, Thanksgiving. Yep.
I just looked it up. The Giants and the Broncos, the Manning Bowl, is actually week 2.
Oh, is it week 2? Wow.
Week 2. That's awesome, man. It's Sunday night.
Wow. Yeah, that's early. That's early.
Yeah.
Let's see. Playoffs, last regular season game, Sunday, December 29th. Playoffs will start the following week. Okay. And, of course, everybody knows that Super Bowl will be at MetLife Stadium. So it's being billed as a New York, New Jersey Super Bowl. And let's see. I'm reading here about the Pro Bowl. Remains in jeopardy. Date and location have not been confirmed. So we'll wait and see. No news on the Pro Bowl as of the airing of this article. So, interesting.
I got one note for you for the schedule. The Bears play both Dallas and the Steelers.
Yeah, we do. We play you guys.
I am going to love the Leafs.
The Bears. We play. You play both us and the Steelers.
Absolutely.
K-Star, two losses that he can already plan for.
I know, right? And actually, Steelers-Bears is week 3, Sunday Night Football in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we get a night game.
That's
Wow. Wow. Yeah, and, you know, and there was one other, you know, I'm bouncing around, guys. You guys got to keep up with me, you know, guys, you, my co-hosts and people listening, because as thoughts enter my head, it was just so much stuff that's been going on, and I feel like I haven't done a show in so long, and just everything's coming out. But, you know, the one thing I want to get you guys' take on this, and I don't know that I've heard this said by any other show covering the draft, and that doesn't mean it hasn't been said. I haven't heard it yet. But, you know, there are times that the Madden voice is the first one to, you know, to make something an issue. I remember last year when Randy Moss came out and said that he was the greatest of all time, and I mentioned how dare he say that in a 49er uniform, and then 3 days later I'm hearing Stephen A. Smith say the same thing. I'm like, do you listen to the Madden voice? Because that's some bull. But anyway, and if this has been said, I apologize, but I really feel like last NFL season, what we saw, I mean, of course, there was a lot of focus on the quarterback and the read option. Okay, we saw a lot of focus on that. And, you know, with Seattle quarterback and Kaepernick and, you know, of course, well, not really Tebow, but
RG3,
thank you. So there was a lot of focus on that. But you know what else we saw last year was how important a good offensive and defensive line is. We saw that last year. We saw two very physical teams that like to control the line of scrimmage go to the Super Bowl. Teams mirrored after each other because obviously the brothers have similar philosophies. And we saw that last year. And, you know, I got to tell you, as I was watching the draft, and I didn't get to watch the entire draft as I normally do, just things coming up that just prevented me, but I tried to track and monitor it as much as I could. It felt to me like a very offensive and defensive line heavy draft. It felt to me like teams are reacting to the success that they saw and making moves. I mean, the very first pick was, what's that kid's name? The very first pick that the Chiefs picked up.
Fisher.
Thank you. You know, it seemed to me that teams are reacting to what they saw last year and have made a commitment to say, we need to protect our quarterback and we need to get pressure on the quarterback. And we're going to do that if we control the line of scrimmage. We need to stop the run. Almost kind of back to basics. And I don't know, is it me or did you guys get that impression? Because that's what I was seeing in this draft. Every time I turned around, another lineman was getting selected.
Well, I don't disagree with your point of view, but I think I had more to do with that was the talent that was in the draft. The talent in the draft wasn't quarterback. It wasn't running back. It wasn't wide receiver. It was offensive line and defensive line. That was the top talent in this draft. And so that's what went. And that's what went most of the first round. Very few of the other positions got picked, but I think 11 offensive linemen got taken in the first round. Was it more than that?
It was a high amount. I'm not really sure how what the actual number ended up being, but it was definitely a big boy draft, but there definitely were. I disagree with it being not very running back friendly. It actually was, but the fact of the matter is teams really are more or less consumer passing, and a lot of these running backs that went in the second round and things like that were kind of falling because of needs elsewhere where teams, again, were going offensive line, defensive line, stuff like that, so they kind of fell as the teams.
But I mean, but I think my point is that the talent pool is a talent pool, but it's not just the numbers, it's where these guys were drafted. You know, when you get Barkley dropping to the fourth round, you get Geno Smith dropping to the second round, you know, you get players that everyone was expecting to get drafted early, and they're dropping, and you're getting, I mean, even for the Cowboys to pick up this center in the first round, where I don't think nobody, I read nothing in Dallas on any other websites, whether it was the Cowboys' own website or any of the pundits that predicted that their first pick would be a center. And I'm using that as an example, of course. So I think that's kind of more my point. The talent pool is a talent pool, Train. You're absolutely right. But wow, you know, what did you say? 11 linemen in the first round?
I'm counting now. It's eight. It was eight linemen and almost as many defensive linemen as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to watch how that plays out in the preseason and in the play. I'm sorry, in the regular season. You know, because generally, I think you guys will agree with me. You know, your first and second round picks should be starters or pretty damn close to starting. So if we're seeing all these linemen go in the first two rounds, then these should be players ready to come in and give an immediate impact. And so. Yeah. Yeah, so I think it'll be interesting to see the impact that these players have, these linemen have in the game. You know, or will they even have an impact? I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is actually the first time that really there weren't too many really quarterbacks picked in the first round in quite a while. I mean,
right.
This happened every once in a while, but to only have one, and honestly – the Bills could have waited much longer, I believe.
Absolutely, exactly.
Than when they did to get to the quarterback. So it seemed to me everyone was more or less trying to build up and establish either offensive line or defensive lines. But while this was going on, I was pretty excited because this whole time, and this is just being a Steelers fan, the whole time, like, while everyone's getting offensive line, defensive line, it allowed us to get the outside linebacker Jarvis Jones, like more of a skill position kind of guy. But because of that, but yeah, teams definitely, the whole first round especially, I think there's two guys outside the first round into the top 10 that weren't offensive linemen drafted, Tavon Austin and one other guy I can't think of at the moment. But yeah, it was definitely a big, big ugly kind of draft, especially in the first round.
I'm looking at an article on sports. I'm sorry?
Yeah, he was talking about the other guy. Other than lineman draft in the first round, offensive and defensive lineman, D. Milliner and Tavon Austin.
Okay.
Austin, D. Milliner went to the Jets. That's right.
Maybe I should ask K-Star instead of telling him what I think. Do you have any thoughts on your arch rival, the Ravens, and their draft?
They're a pretty good draft, as they typically do. I know they filled two needs immediately. They drafted the safety and linebacker who are expected to start for them. Both pretty good players from the collegiate level. It looks like they had a pretty good draft. The one thing that I will say, though, is, and luckily, because they were the last pick in the first round and in the second, at least, they weren't guys that, you know, could have been even more of a talent driven kind of players like that would have been taken in the middle of the rounds or second, so at least they had to wait a little bit. They had definitely had some great value picks and probably two potential starters right away. They had a good draft. They always had a good draft, though. That's Nyankin new.
Yeah, well, Ozzie Newsome knows what he's doing over there, no doubt about it. But I think that the fact that their first four picks were all defense. You know, a safety, a linebacker, a tackle, and an end. And that's serious, you know. I think they had a pretty good draft. I'm looking at a Sports Illustrated article that gave the Ravens an A-. I'm only going to mention the teams that they gave A's to. And I'm going through the list now. Packers an A-. Jaguars an A. Vikings A-. Jets a C. But anyway, 49ers an A, Rams an A, Titans A-. That's it. So, I find it intriguing that teams that went into the play that went far into the playoffs and had great seasons are retooling with good draft classes. And teams, and some of the teams that didn't do well, it appears that they're not really addressing their issues in this draft. And I think it's going to be very interesting. I don't think Detroit came out of this draft very well, if you ask me. And they to me weren't a very good team. Had some defensive issues. And, you know, I know they got, you know, the creep, but that was a team that I had some high expectations for coming out of the draft. And, you know, when I look at, you know, I'm sitting here looking now at their picks. I mean, you know, they got a guard in the third round who, you know, looks like he could be something. They got a tight end in the seventh round who looks like they can be something. They picked up a couple of defensive ends. They picked up a cornerback. But these guys aren't any, they're not blue chippers. So, and they picked up a punter in the fifth round. A punter? Detroit? A punter? I'm sorry. I just I don't get it. Guys, I'm doing a lot of talking. We jump in here and I don't know what you guys want to talk about.
Well, I look at the Detroit draft and I guess the main thing that I think, other analysts were hitting on the fact that they didn't go out for any of the offensive linemen towards the top, you know, that they could have gotten because, even though Matthew Stafford has staggering numbers, he has staggering numbers because he's throwing to Calvin Johnson. And Calvin Johnson can catch over everybody and a lot of guys at the same time. So, but looking at what they drafted, I mean, Detroit is hurting on to be on both sides of the ball. And defensively, It's more have to do with mental than talent. They got the talent up front, but they don't have the talent on the back end. So I can almost understand their first two picks, especially since they couldn't keep Cliff Avril. So you're trying to replace Cliff Avril. You're trying to get some help in your secondary, and then you address offensive line. The second half of the draft is just like, that's a question mark. I don't know what they were doing from the fifth round on.
Yep. The first four picks I thought were pretty decent. I mean, again, like you just said, they had to replace Cliff Avril's departure, and they did. They got cornerback help or secondary help with Darius Slay at Mississippi State, who was pretty good in college. And the thing with them is they've had a pretty poor secondary, but a pretty strong rush. So I think that it kind of did address the need a little bit there, and getting a guard in third round was nice as well. But despite them not having what appears to be the strongest draft on paper, I will say that to me, the Detroit Lions are a pretty intriguing team. I really do think that Reggie Bush, I mean, has been helping tremendously out the backfield. Think about it, guarding Calvin Johnson, two guys and everything. You're going to have one-on-one with linebackers and slot corners and stuff like that with Reggie Bush at the backfield. It's going to be very, very tough for them to defend all facets of the Lions offense, but their draft was okay. Well, you know, again, the one thing I want to remind everyone about the draft is right now we can give people A's, B's, C's, D's, S, but no one really knows how it's going to play out except for but a couple of seasons from now. So just kind of want to preface that this whole draft, you know, review and everything we're doing now with that because injuries can play a part, opportunity. And, guys, for me, I think the only time a bust truly happens in the NFL is if when a guy simply just isn't motivated to do much more, they get their money. Because they all have talent. They're drafted for a reason. But if a guy doesn't want, if a guy has a bad attitude, that's to me the only time busts really pan out to be busts. Just a guy not having the motivation or just settling for being adequate.
Say that again. I'm not sure I understood what you just said. A bust is when a guy doesn't have motivation. It's not actual performance.
Yeah, so for me. Well, yeah, right. Basically, for me, when a bust happens, it's only because they've settled. They have the talent. That's why they were drafted in the first place, especially the higher-round picks who are only considered busts to begin with. Obviously, performance is the reason why they become busts ultimately, but leading up to why they perform bad, why they perform well, to me, is their preparation and, you know, them working to either work hard so they do succeed, or for them, I think just settling and not, you know, really having the motivation to be great. Because again, the talent's there. It's always been there.
How do you know the talent's there? They haven't played one snap in the NFL.
Well,
so
when
how do
you're
know?
Scouted, those guys, because they go through a pretty grueling scouting process. So when you have a guy, for instance, who is, let's take a cornerback for example. Let's take a guy like maybe Fabian Washington. You know, a really fast cornerback who was drafted by the Raiders years ago, who had excellent, you know, speed, ran top 40.
Madden guy would bring up Fabian Washington, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, he was the first round. So, like, he was legitimately, like, I believe he was in top 10 overall that season in the draft. So he was a guy who had a lot of talent. Again, very fast, very physical guy who apparently had good fluidity, stuff like that. So yeah, basically a guy with all the talent, but it didn't translate on the field very well.
You know what that means? You know what that means? It means he doesn't have the talent to play at that level. That's what that means. Because the guy... Everyone that comes out of college and gets drafted is not going to be successful. And it doesn't necessarily mean because they didn't work hard enough. It just means, I mean, you know, it's another level that not everyone can transition to.
But I think there is some legitimacy to what K-Star is saying. Some of these guys do get drafted and they think that's it. They honestly think they've made it. And they get to that next level. I mean, but I'm not disagreeing
with that. I'm disagreeing with the other statement that if they work hard and give it everything they have, they're going to be successful. That's completely not true. Some guys just don't make it, and they bust their asses in the NFL, and they get cut. We had Bobby Carpenter on our team. Bobby Carpenter worked his butt off and ended up going to Detroit, and I don't even know where he is now. He just wasn't very good, and he's got an NFL pedigree, but he just couldn't do it. He just didn't have what it took to be a successful linebacker in the NFL. And I'm sure you guys have had players on your team that have come through that you wanted to do well, and they just couldn't do it. They got cut, they got released, they got traded, went to another team, maybe floundered over there for a year, got, you know, practice squad. I mean, not everyone, because they got drafted, is going to be successful, just as some players that don't get drafted can come into the NFL and become successful. So you're giving way too much credit to the scouting system as the be-all and end-all. Yes, it's a tool that they use, and it's very good, but they miss talent all the time. They make mistakes all the time.
I mean, that's true. But I think the part that I like about K-Star's statement is more or less the work ethic that a person has to have once they get in the NFL. Some of these guys do, and a lot of them do, fall to the wayside because of work ethic. They don't have a long career, and it doesn't have to be a superstar career. It could just be just a solid starter, a solid special team. I mean, people will stay in the league for years just purely off special team, but they don't have the work ethic.
But I got to be honest, I haven't heard a lot of those stories of people failing in the NFL, because I hear them periodically. But I don't hear a lot of those being the stories that these guys. I mean, at this point, you've played. You're now 21 years old, right? 22 years old. You've played football. You played peewee football. You played high school football. You've played college football. You were some level of a standout. Played at a very high level. Your dream has been to go into the NFL. You get signed.
Now you get paid.
Yeah, but you get signed to a modest contract because there are
no.
Yeah?
You're getting paid millions. I don't care what it is. You're still getting paid millions at the end of the day, especially if you're a high-end pick. Even now, they still are.
Well,
and a lot of these guys a lot of those guys get their pay, and they think they've made it. But they aren't dedicated to being great. They aren't motivating themselves. Money, for a lot of people, is motivation in itself.
Who is determining that? I'm sorry. I've been watching football actually longer than all you guys, than both of you. I don't hear
but
a
no
lot
one's seen what any, but hold on, but no one's seen what's going on behind the scenes, so it doesn't matter if you watch longer.
How can you make that statement then? Then where is
because when you have all the talent in the world, what else can it be besides – work ethic and motivation? Like, what else can it be? When you look at Ryan Leaf, that's what it was. I mean, that's well documented. And attitude.
Ryan,
I mean, you look at Jamarcus Russell, you had guys throwing him under the bus all the time. He's not working hard enough. He's not doing all the film sessions. That happens.
Ryan Leaf's attitude was well documented, not his work ethic, but he had a crap.
Marco Russell and his laziness was.
Marco,
we'll bring him up then, and how he didn't do any film studies and all that stuff.
There are, but you're picking one. That's the one example that I will give you. That's the one that I will give you, is Jamarcus Russell. Jamarcus Russell. I'll give you that one. Yes. Gained weight, was lazy, didn't work. Now he's trying to get back in the NFL. They did a story on him on one of the ESPN shows. I watched it. It was very good. Found out, you know, his parent died and all that. And I'll give you that one. But that's not the norm. I think the misnomer in your statement is the statement of all the talent in the world. You're coming into the NFL now, and you're playing now again. You've gone through high school. You were all state, you know. College, you got a scholarship. You're used to playing at, on a very high level and being elite. Now you join the NFL, and guess what? So is everybody else. So you no longer have all the talent in the world. You have a lot of talent that got you in there. You have all the talent in the world when you get on the field and you produce. Then we can say, oh, look at Barry Sanders, got all the talent in the world. Look at Adrian Peterson. All
that's
the
not
talent.
True, though. Look at guys like Hines Ward who really didn't run great 40s. And the reason why they succeeded isn't because they had all the talent in the world. It's because of how hard they worked and the fact that they were outworking other people. I mean, Joe and Jerry Rice.
I agree with that. I agree that Hines Ward is an example of someone who worked very, very hard and had a very successful career because he worked hard. But I don't think the opposite is true. I don't think you can just say if someone failed, they didn't work hard enough, because everyone's not going to make it. That's why you have. That's why you have 90-man rosters at the beginning of preseason, and you have to trim it down to 53 before the first game, because everyone's not going to make it. And
but those in the first four rounds will pretty much always make the initial roster.
But you're not going to tell me seven guys out of those 37, the bulk of them aren't making it because they didn't try hard enough. They didn't make it because they're not good enough. It's as simple as that. The system allows for it to be heavy recruiting, and then the cream will rise to the top, and the elite will be successful. You can work your ass off, but guess what? You may not have enough, and too many guys just don't have it. Not because they don't work hard enough, they just don't have it. I truly believe at that level, unless you can show me more Jamarcus Russell stories, which I don't think you're going to find many, I think at that level, the reason that they don't succeed is because they're just not good enough. Period. They're just not good enough. Sorry. And I think you can translate that to any sport. You know, everyone doesn't make it. You know, and you know, hey, wouldn't you have liked to have been a professional athlete? I would have loved to have been a professional basketball player. Guess what? I wasn't good enough. No one's going to tell me I didn't work hard. I just wasn't good enough. I ran track. I was very good at track. Wasn't good enough. Busted my ass. Wasn't good enough. So I don't know. Train, what do you think? Now that you've heard my full analysis.
I completely disagree with everything. I do think there's some legitimacy to guys not really giving it their all when they get there. And not every case gets documented. When you start to bring up examples, no, you can't bring up a lot of them. But not every, you won't know about every guy that just went in there and didn't work hard, or every guy that went in there and worked hard and didn't make it. I mean,
But how can you make a statement without substantiation to it, though? You got to get that from somewhere, then. Somewhere other than Jamarcus.
Well, my own point of view of the statement come from listening to one Bear, former Bear, Curtis Enos. I mean, he said it when he got drafted. He didn't put an effort. He said he could have been much better, but he got in there and he didn't put an effort. He said, wow, I didn't work hard.
Okay.
So now we have two.
And that's my point.
Not everyone's gonna admit that. Like, I don't understand. Like, a lot of people, the worst thing you can do in sports, by the way, is throw your teammate on the bus and say, oh, well, he didn't work hard enough. That's like the worst thing you can do, because then you're trying to play someone who doesn't care. That's actually considered sports taboo. So you're not gonna hear that a lot anyway.
Really? So no one's gonna say this guy didn't make it because he didn't work hard enough? The coaches
a lot of people will not. No, a lot of people will not throw their team. No, a lot of people will not throw their team in the bus.
He's gone. And people throw their teammates under the bus all the time, and they just stand by anonymous. All the time. You guys don't. We watch Hard Knocks, right? Hard Knocks comes on every year, just about, right? And we see the players getting cut. And I've watched every episode of every Hard Knocks that's ever been ever recorded. I have never heard them say, "Guy just didn't try hard enough." You know?
How about when they come into camp out of shape initially? That happens all the time.
Why does that happen?
Why does that happen?
They're
not working hard enough.
Sanchez, or McNabb.
Yeah, Sanchez is another example. Yeah, teammates rumbling, he's not in the film enough, he's not partying, blah, blah, blah. You hear that.
I've
heard a statement made about both Sanchez and McNabb, and I don't know how true it is, but it's been said by their own teammates.
And McNabb played 13 years.
Yeah.
I thought that, but see, now you're changing it to what K-Star was saying is these guys don't make it because they're not trying hard enough. Well, you can't use Sanchez, who's a starter in New York right now, as an example. You can't use McNabb, who was a starter for 13 years, as an example.
No, that's not on that. It was just saying that how some stories get out. I was just saying that that's how some stories get out. Some people have made those statements about those two, but I see what McNabb's career was. So I don't. That's why I say I don't see how that statement is true. It's true for him. Listen. My position is this. I do believe there are some players who don't make it because they think they've made it once they've gotten drafted. I believe that. Okay, I'm not saying that's all of them, T. I'm not saying that everyone that doesn't make it does. You do have to be good when you get to the NFL. Sometimes you just don't have the mustard to cut it. But I do believe there are some who don't make it simply because they think they've already made it. So they don't put in that effort that you need to compete at that level.
Or maybe there's some players who got paid because they started off really well, and then they ended up being complacent and lazy, like Albert Haynesworth. I mean, it happens. There's guys who get paid out there who then know they really made it,
I think my point was that it happens, but to broad brush stroke it and say that it's a large number, I think is not true. I think, sure, I think you're going to find isolated examples of players that get drafted and they think they've gotten paid or they don't put any effort. Certainly, they'll be here and there. But to say that that's the norm or that's more the case than not, I think is absolutely false. You know, these guys are coming into a very competitive situation, you know, where there's only 53 guys on that team and the team's starting with 90 players. So you know everyone's not going to make the team. I don't care what you got signed for, you know everyone's not going to make the team. So you know how competitive the NFL is. We know it, and we're sitting home. So why do we know it, and these guys don't know it? They know exactly what they're getting into. They have an agent. You know, they have personal trainers. They have advisors. They have attorneys, you know, and they know exactly what they're getting into. Now, is there the occasional person that takes it for granted and doesn't put in the effort? Sure. But I don't buy for a second that that's the norm or that it's the predominant. I think it's just you're just not good enough. It's just as simple as that. You just aren't good enough. And I think we're gonna see a lot of that this year. You know, we're gonna see a lot of these guys that were drafted and they're gonna get out there and they're gonna bust their asses and they're gonna work as hard as can be and they're gonna be great teammates, right? That's what we hear. They're great teammates. I'd take them on my team anytime. But you know what? Just doesn't cut the mustard. It's just not good enough. Anyway. Woo!
I don't know. Well, that even wasn't even on the agenda. What?
No, that was a good one, though. Anytime I get to teach K-Star something about football, it's always a fun conversation.
Oh, wow. There he goes.
What does man just
say? I was going to say, out of all the teams I saw that drafted, I did like, I mean, I'm not crazy about what these analysts do as far as grades, but there are two teams I like what they did. One particularly was in my division, but I just like the fact that they tried to go get what they needed, and that was Minnesota. Three picks in the first round and trading back up to try to get what they needed. The other team I like what they did was 49ers. And I know you asked us about surprising moves, and it wasn't just very surprising, but, I mean, they had the picks to do it, and they moved up, and they went and got the safety Reed from LSU. Now, I haven't watched a whole lot of college players play, but I did watch him. And that guy is nice. That guy is very, very good at safety, I think. And he gets to play with a team that has a very good pass rush. I don't know whether he'll end up being as good as Golston or not, but I think he's a solid starter. I believe they ended up picking up the running back, Lattimore.
Yes, they did in the fourth round.
I don't know if it's recovering from injury, but, I mean, that could turn out to be very promising for them.
Yeah, you know, and again, you know, just to piggyback what you're saying, I look at the Cowboys who, you know, let go of Sensabaugh, they need a safety, and, you know, so the 49ers trade up to get Reed, a free safety, and the Cowboys trade down and take a center, and, you know, waited till the third round their second pick, which actually, if I believe that's the pick they got from San Francisco, to pick up a safety. Guy I don't know anything about. Yeah. So, they, you know, so that, that's – I'm sorry?
Wow. No, I just noticed that was the pick that was traded.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and if you asked me, and I dare I say any Cowboy fan, what should the Cowboys draft first, a center or a safety? I think it's unanimous that it would be a safety, especially since they got rid of Sensabaugh, who was a starter. They got rid of him. Now, McCray got hurt, and he's looking like he could be something. And there's another guy, I think his name is Manny Johnson, who's been injured ever since he was drafted, but they have a lot of promise in him. But the bottom line is we still need a safety. The Cowboys have not had a Pro Bowl safety since Roy Williams. And Roy Williams ain't even in the NFL anymore because he broke his forearm too many times, so he's out. And his last 3 years in Dallas, he couldn't even play anymore, and he went to Cincinnati and couldn't play there. And really haven't had an impact safety, if you ask me, since Darren Woodson. So I don't get it. And we see teams that do well, they've got at least one ball hawking safety back there getting something done. And I don't know. Instead, you go get a center. I don't know. It just irritates me. Anyway, K-Star, any thoughts? I lost my train of thought for a minute. I get so aggravated with my Cowboys.
they really haven't had a safety since Darren Woodson. I mean, that's actually legitimate. I can't think of any. I mean, the fact that Gerald Sensabaugh might have been the best safety since him is kind of eye-popping, to say the least.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, and to really piggyback again what Train was saying, you know, the 49ers really did have a very strong draft, and this is a team that just went to the Super Bowl. And so they are positioning themselves to really be a dominant team for years to come. I mean, this is what we've seen top teams do. We've seen the 49ers do it in the past. You know, other iterations of the 49ers under DeBartolo and Walsh and Seifert back in those days. We've seen the Cowboys do it, you know, with Jimmy Johnson. You know, we've seen the Steelers do it, you know, with Cowher and Chuck Knoll. You know, we've seen teams that are contenders restock. We're seeing the Ravens do it as we speak, right? The Ravens restocking. They lose Reed, no problem. Get someone in the draft. Ray Lewis retires, no problem. Get someone in the draft, you know? And, you know, first couple of rounds, they're finding players to fill their holes. And, you know, NFC beware. I mean, I'm going to count these picks. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 draft picks for the 49ers. One in the first round, two in the second round, one in the third because they traded it, two in the fourth round. So, you know, it, pretty much the consensus is the first four rounds are really your meat. And then after that, you know, 5 through 7, you know, you see what you get. But the first four rounds are really the meat of your draft. And, you know, these guys got 7 picks in the first four rounds. And I'm looking at a free safety we just talked about, an end, defensive end, a tight end, a linebacker, a wide receiver, and a Lattimore, the running back who had that, you know, really gruesome knee injury. But, you know, we've seen Willis McGahee, a gruesome knee injury, and he's been a very successful NFL running back. And I'm speaking, you know, college coming into the NFL. So, I mean, Lattimore could certainly – you know, with today's technology and, you know, Dr. James Andrews and these guys, I think you're right. I think that could be the steal of the draft right there. So, I don't know. It's depressing as a Cowboy fan because I'm sitting there looking at these teams stock and restock. I'm sitting there saying we ain't never going to get out of our own way. We ain't never going to get out of our own way. I'm aggravated.
Jerry Jones, man. Jerry Jones.
Oh, Jerry Jones.
I'm angry. What do you guys think about the Eagles? I know that's my division, but the Eagles have 6 quarterbacks on their roster, including
they just drafted
Barkley.
Barkley, yeah.
Yeah. You know, that gives them 6 quarterbacks. You know, what do you think Chip Kelly's thinking over there? K-Star, you seem to follow college a little bit more than us. This guy comes from Oregon, a very aggressive offensive system. And now he's got 6 quarterbacks. What do you think's going on over there?
I'm really not sure. To me, it just sounds like they're just more or less, probably not only for this year, which I think the battle between this year for quarterbacks will be between Vic and Foles, but then also, you know, in the future with Barkley now in the mix, and you know, maybe Vic if he can stick around for this year. I think that again that they're going to cut Dennis Dixon. I don't think he's going to last. I don't think that ultimately out after this year, Foles will last. He'll probably, you know, be out on his way via trade, and that's really dependent again how Vic and Foles play out this year. If whoever is the whoever plays poorly between those two, between Vic and Foles, I think will be out immediately after the season's end. Again, whether it's trade or being cut, I believe Vic only has a one-year deal there anyway, so that's something that, you know, to pay kind of close attention to. But, you know, it just it seems to me like Jim or like Chip Kelly really isn't sure what he wants. He's going to let these guys compete and go from there. But he is, again, in my estimation, pretty comfortable with Barkley being in his plans for the future because, let's be honest, he's not going to see the field this season. At least I don't foresee that ever happening. I just see Vic versus Foles as the competition there for this season.
I just think it's a situation where a new coach wants his own quarterback. I mean, yeah, he took over the team with Vic and with Nick Foles there, and we saw what both of them can do. You know what kind of offense you're bringing in. And, you know, from his point of view, maybe he's looking at Matt Barkley as someone who could take over at that position at some point, not this year, but definitely after this year.
Yeah.
I mean,
let me ask you guys to put your general manager hat on, because I think the Barkley pick was more of, I cannot believe that this guy is still available. We still don't know what we're doing at quarterback, so why not?
Right.
If you're the GM, Train, and a potential star, someone who's gotten a lot of press and has done some really good things, drops like Barkley did, you know, he was projected as high as a first round pick. Okay. And you're sitting there in the fourth round and you have your quarterback. Okay. I mean, all practical purpose, for all sense and purpose here, the Eagles have enough quarterbacks. I mean, they don't need to draft Barkley. Okay. But do you draft the best available player, or do you look to fill a need if you're the general manager?
If you late, if where they got him, I think you do best available.
So the fact that he did drop doesn't worry you? The fact that if you're looking at him as a bargaining chip later and maybe a trade or something later, the fact that he did drop doesn't worry you? That, you know, he's a projected first rounder, but he dropped to the fourth round. I'm going to grab him because according to our charts, he's the best available player. So I'm going to grab him. That doesn't worry you that there's a reason he dropped?
All I'm going to say is one name. Tom Brady.
Yeah, well,
that is my case. I'm not saying this guy's gonna turn Tom Brady. All I'm saying is you don't know. So you have the pick. You see the guy on the board. You take the shot. You don't know. But if you think he can be, you take the shot. The worst thing to do is to not take it. Someone else get him. He ends up being their Pro Bowl quarterback.
What are your thoughts on that? Hey, sir.
Well, if it was a team who already had an established quarterback and pretty much a direction of what they wanted to do, and then they took someone like Barkley, I would have an issue with it. But with the Eagles, really, what appears, don't know what the hell they're really doing at the quarterback spot. To me, it just kind of says that, hey, we really aren't sure what where we're going to go from the quarterback position. So we're going to see. And we're going to make sure that we have a chance to land possibly a pretty good quarterback who could be our quarterback in the future because we don't believe in the guys right now that are on this current roster. So I don't think the Eagles made a bad pick at all. I think that for them it kind of is neat because, again, they don't really know who they're going to – I don't think they think that they have a quarterback of the future on their roster as it stands before this draft pick happened. I think now that with Barkley, they think that they might possibly have a chance at that. And at the very least, that he's probably going to prove himself not to be, or he'll prove himself to be that guy. So it kind of gives them flexibility and freedom to really see what they have and what, you know, they can kind of do from there at the quarterback spot. It just gives them more flexibility and more options.
I mean, my only problem with how you initially started off, K-Star, saying that, you know, the Eagles don't know what they're doing. I mean, you got to consider that this is the new head coach. And who coaches their own? They want to bring in their own. Now, before the draft, you didn't know. They weren't going to reach for Matt Barkley. They definitely had their own grade for him, but they weren't going to reach for him. They were going to address what they needed to address. And, you know, they took a shot when he failed, but that's not to assume that they didn't know what they were doing before the draft as far as quarterbacking. I mean, evidently, they don't think they have what they need for their franchise.
Right, and that's kind of what I was saying when I said they don't know what they're doing. I mean, they don't think right now that they have a quarterback on their roster that's capable of being the guy for the future. So with that is why they took Barkley, because with them, with Barkley, they might have that guy. And that's why I don't have an issue with the pick itself.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this move, as I'm reading here a little bit while you guys are talking, is it appears that they went to get Barkley, being that he was still there. I'm reading that Philadelphia gave Jacksonville a fourth-round pick and a seventh-rounder to move ahead of Kansas City to take Barkley. And Chip Kelly says, we're going to take the best value on the board. So their philosophy clearly was Barkley was the best option. Best talent available, we're taking him. And I'm reading a quote here. The best value on the board by far was Matt. He's an extremely mature young man, intelligent, articulate. He has that it factor. I don't know. I mean, I'm torn because I see the logic in going after the best talent. But you signed Michael Vick to another year deal. Why? You went and brought in Dennis Dixon, who was a Steeler. You still have Foles. He's still under contract, okay? Nick Foles. And now you bring in a guy who is looking to start his career into a crowded locker room with a new coach, clearly going to be a new system, and you're going to put, you know, at least these four guys, and I'm not finding the other guy. I know that there's a couple of more quarterbacks on the roster.
They're irrelevant. But
they probably are. So let's look at the four names that we know, which is Vic, Foles, Dixon, and Barkley. And so you're going to put these four guys in the middle against each other. I mean, part of me, yeah, all's fair in love and war, and I get it. It's competition, NFL. But part of me just feels like it's just – I'm not sure Chip Kelly knows what he's doing. Yeah, part of
it's
just not fair.
I don't know, T. I honestly believe. I mean, to me, Matt Barkley has an edge. He was picked by Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly inherited Vic and Foles.
Yeah, but didn't Dixon used to play for him, though?
For who? For Chip Kelly?
Didn't Dixon used to play for Kelly?
I don't know. I mean, that I didn't know or don't know. So, I mean,
Did you have to Vic play for Kelly?
No, Dennis Dixon.
Oh, yeah, no, Dixon did. Dixon did in college. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
This is my thing. What I'm saying is you inherited Vic and Foles, okay? So you're not going to immediately just get rid of Foles. You just got them. It's kind of inherited. Vic is your veteran. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to immediately drop your veteran. So you've seen what your veteran can do. You go get Dennis Dixon, who's played for you. Now you're in the draft, and you have a chance to get a guy who at one point did have a high grade. I mean, he's going after it on. To me, it's just an advantage, Matt Barkley. If anybody be sweating, it'd be Nick Foles.
Oh, yeah. You know what? You know what? I stand corrected. It is the Jets that have six quarterbacks on their roster. It is not the Eagles. The Eagles have these four quarterbacks on their roster. It is the Jets.
Now, that's a team that don't know what they're doing. Team that's lost.
I guess we would be. So I got confused for a second. It's going to be interesting to see this play out, and I'm not optimistic that this is going to end successfully because you've got three veterans on this team. And I mean, Foles – You know, he's not a rookie anymore, okay? So you've got a guy who's played a couple of years. You've got Dixon who's been around for, you know, 5 or 6 years, played for Chip Kelly, and, of course, we've got Vic. And now you're bringing this rookie in and throwing him in that mix. I just think there's more confusion there than organized chaos. That's just my opinion. Time will tell, but it'll be interesting to see. But you really, I don't know. Is anyone going to really beat out Michael Vick to be the starter on day one? I'm not saying he'll keep the job.
No,
I'm not
But do you want that, though? I mean, my thing is, if I draft Matt Barkley fourth round, I don't want him to start this year. If I'm coach, I don't want him to start this year.
Well,
I mean,
we saw three rookies last year do pretty damn good.
I'm not knocking that. That's great. I still think those are anomalies. I also think those are well-coached players. I also think those are players where the coaches designed a system around them and didn't force them into a system. But you've also seen the players who sat 2, 3, even 4 years, i.e. Aaron Rodgers, and they are beasts. So he doesn't need to play this year. It won't hurt him to sit 1 year.
But Aaron Rodgers played behind Brett Favre. I mean, I don't think that's a fair comparison.
True. I mean, same thing with Phillip Rivers. He sat. He waited behind Drew Brees. Drew Brees played 2 more years for San Diego before Phillip Rivers could take over.
Right. I think, yes. So what I'm saying is, I think it's Michael Vick's job. But yeah. I think we're seeing recent evidence that with the right system, and certainly Chip Kelly is an offensive genius, with the right system, we saw rookies do very well last year, and these were not first-round picks, okay? You know, and they did very, very well. So I don't know. Clearly, he said it. I went to get Barkley because he was the best value on the board. That's why he went and got him. And it's just something feels funny about that. I don't know. You're building a team. And you have missing pieces, and you want to go out and find those missing pieces, and you're taking something that is the best available option, but is it addressing the missing pieces? I don't know.
I can't argue that it isn't when you talk about it moving forward.
Well, I can only quote what he said, which is he was the best available value.
Right.
He's not saying that we have an issue at quarterback and I see him as the potential solution. He's saying it'll be an open competition, you know, all the things that all the coaches say. But he's saying, you know, this is the best value on the board. If I'm Matt Barkley, I'm like, great, thanks. Do you have anything that I can play football? I mean, you know, I don't know.
Man.
No, go ahead. I just want to say
my message to Matt Park is pick up a clipboard, learn Chip Kelly's offense first year, come back the second year and do his thing.
Hey, but it's a show me now league now. I mean, these rookies coming in now, especially at quarterback now with what we saw last year, these coaches are saying get ready because you might be playing.
I mean, yeah, he has to be. He has to prepare, but at the same time, he does have time. Chip Kelly's his first year, you have time. Dick is at the helm. You have time.
Yeah.
You have time. And I think there's benefit from coming, from being that guy who sits that 1 or 2 years or a few years out of managing.
Yeah. K-Star, what are your thoughts on the Jets?
What are my thoughts on the Jets? I just think it's a little – I think they had a good pick in Geno Smith, first of all. I'll say that. But my only problem with the whole Geno thing is the fact of the matter is in the first couple of rounds, they really surrounded – they didn't surround him with offensive talent where they had deficiencies at the receiver position and running back position. They built around the defense. They're drafting defensive guys. So when you draft a quarterback and he still doesn't have any talent around him, it's worrisome. Because what exactly do you expect to be different now that was different than Mark Sanchez? Now, don't get me wrong. I think Geno Smith is a much more talented player and athlete than Sanchez. So, of course, he'll probably do better even with the same talent or lack thereof that Sanchez had made available to him. But to me, it's like, all right, well, you know, you draft a guy, but you don't give him, you know, what he really needs to really succeed, especially if you want him to play immediately, which, honestly, it probably will be the case. I expect him probably to be starter opening day just because there's been some rumblings anyway about Sanchez being possibly being cut or asking for his release, blah, 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 stuff like that. So if you have a rookie quarterback, you know, what you probably should do is give him, you know, the best chance of succeeding, and I just don't see it with what they have at wide receiver right now and at running back. So,
okay.
They're a mess.
I'm not going to just turn into a Jets fan right now, but I will say this. After getting Geno Smith, they went out the offensive lineman. True enough, they weren't in the first and third, first and second round. But they did go try to get offensive lineman. So one of the things you do need at quarterback are linemen who will keep the bad guys off. So they did go get that. One thing you got to take into account is Jets is just all jacked up anyway. This is just to be for real. I mean, the prior GM really didn't do a good job. That team of horrible service. So they got money in places where it shouldn't be, i.e. Sanchez, and then they had to let one of the best defensive players, arguably the best cornerback in the league, go because they got money in the wrong place. So they tried to address that, and they get Dean Miller. I mean, really, it's going to be a while before the Jets are able to fix their problems. It's going to take a lot of players. Now, for running back, they traded later to get I believe was it Chris Ivory? Who they traded later to get?
Yeah, they got Ivory.
Yeah, they picked up Chris Ivory from the Saints later on, and we've seen Chris Ivory run hard. So you know you got a running back that will run hard, you know, and it's just a matter of how many reps he can get. So honestly, man, I mean, they couldn't do any worse.
Well, I'm not sure that I completely agree that the Revis thing was all about money. You know, Revis has made some comments that the Jets really didn't pursue him aggressively like he thought they would. And if I remember correctly, I think that the Jets actually gave the Bucks some money to take Revis. So I'm not sure about that. But what I will say, I'm not saying I disagree with you, Trent. I'm not sure. But what I will say is I think Smith is going – Geno Smith is going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. I absolutely agree with both you guys' comments on his talent. I don't know that he'll be a good quarterback in New York. What would make you believe that the Jets have any knowledge on how to produce or create a good quarterback? They have done nothing at quarterback since Brett Favre and his brief stint there. And, you know, Sanchez has stunk up the joint and remained the starter. They went out and got Tebow, never gave him a chance to be a starter, yet as we all who watch First Take know, what he did, you know, with the Broncos and what he did to the Steelers in the playoffs, they brought him in, and then what did he run? You know, half a dozen plays all year? I mean, he did nothing. You know, this is the first-round draft pick, and they never gave him a chance. They signed David Garrard, who's had chronic back issues, and I guess he's better now. I don't know. So we'll see. And now they bring in Geno Smith. I don't have any faith that they know what the heck they're doing. And as a matter of fact, I found a quote. hold on. I just lost it. Good. Where did it go? Hold on. But anyway, I'll paraphrase it. But it said something to the file. Here it is. Hey, we have four, maybe even six quarterbacks, and I hope they're all thinking, hey, I have an opportunity to go win this job. Really? Really? So when Sanchez was thinking it up last year and just playing horribly, and everybody, including us on the Man Voice, was saying, you can't do any worse by putting Tebow in there, so give him a shot. And it never happened. What makes us believe that you're going to unseat Mark Sanchez unless they release him? Which there are rumors that could be happening, but it hasn't happened yet. I mean, that statement right there kind of insinuates that maybe they're not. Maybe they are just going to send everyone to training camp and have an open competition. And it just I will agree that it doesn't seem quite as organized chaos is what's going on in Philly. It seems completely chaotic, and they don't have a clue what they're doing. And this poor rookie's going to get thrown in the mix.
Yeah.
You know, and be lost, just like Tebow was lost. I think that they, you know, to me, it doesn't make sense to have six quarterbacks on your roster. I don't get it. You know, I don't get it. It's just too many. You know, you want to have a battle between two, three, maybe four max, fine. Six? I don't know. I'm getting aggravated.
I would say, I would say just for Geno's sake, I would feel much better for him if he was under a new head coach, if it wasn't Rex Ryan. And not saying Rex Ryan is a bad coach or anything, but I think he would be in much better shape if he was under if a new head coach had just gotten hired and then he just got drafted.
Yeah. Something popped into my head, and I'm remiss that I didn't mention this at the beginning of the show, and I planned to, but we got, you know, that's so into what we were doing. But I do want to take a minute and just publicly send out the Madden Voices condolences to those lost in the Boston Marathon bombing, and to anybody injured, anybody hurt, and family and friends that were affected. That rocked the entire world, not just the sports world, because it is a huge sporting event, but it rocked the entire world. I'm sure many of us either knew or had friends of friends that were up there running in one of the largest marathons in the world, and it was just an unbelievable event. And, I just wanted to extend that. And I wanted to make a comment that it's really, I think it's interesting in this day and age what social media has done to this world. And I'm speaking from a positive position, not a negative position. But the ability to have hundreds of videos and images that were tweeted and put on Facebook and out there to help identify these men and really help law enforcement do their job, and that people were sending in their home videos and their home pictures to the FBI and local law enforcement. I mean, it's just a new era, it's a new age, and it's incredible. And then the fact that we can all go on Facebook and Twitter and send support and best wishes to you know, and all these causes. Of course, there's fraud behind that too, but I want to speak positively. It is just amazing to me what social media has done in a positive, impact to the world, to the sports world, and these types of tragedies and issues. And you know, I find myself when these things happen, I was watching TV and I heard something about a bombing at the marathon, that it was an explosion. I find myself going to Twitter and Facebook almost before turning on CNN or MSNBC, because people there, you know, I literally had a high school friend of mine who lives up in that area where everything was going out, updating us on Facebook every couple minutes of everything that was going on, because that's her neighborhood. And she was afraid to go outside, which they were told not to anyway, but she's supposed to go to work, and she didn't know what to do. And I'm sitting there reading her updates as to what was going on as much as I'm watching CNN. You know, and that's all social media. It's just it's amazing. But anyway, I just had to extend our sympathies and condolences and best wishes to family and friends and anybody affected by that tragedy. Did you guys want to jump in on that at all, or you want to move on?
I did everything you said, dude.
Yeah.
My condolences to all the families out there. I mean, I didn't know anyone personally, but you know, anything like that is always considered tragic, and I'm just glad they did catch the guys who were responsible.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I don't know that we've left any stone unturned for this draft. I think we've done a pretty unique job of giving.
Oh,
awesome.
I got one story, T. Matt Tatea goes to San Diego.
Sorry.
Immediately when he got drafted. You know, I thought Chicago was going to take him at 20 because I thought that all the good offensive linemen were taken. And I thought we got Kyle Long. I know what pedigree he comes from. It's like, all right, I guess I wrote that we did need a guard. But I see Matt Tatea second round, taken by the Chargers. And immediately when he gets picked, I'm thinking Junior Seau. It's just another one. Can he follow in his footsteps? I mean, because the dude can play ball. Get all the naive stuff that happened with the mystery girl over the internet. The guy can play ball.
Hmm. Well, first of all, I think it was a good pick for San Diego, and certainly we will make comparisons to a Junior Seau. Absolutely, I am not so quick to just dismiss the whole catfish thing. I'm not so quick because there was a level of I don't want to call it naivety, but some of his story to this day still doesn't completely add up. And, you know, when you look at character, I think there's some questions around the story of the girlfriend who died and this, that, and the other. And it left, and clearly one of the reasons why he, you know, ultimately became a second-round pick. But here's my bigger issue. Even if we say he was an innocent victim, he was naive, and he didn't do anything wrong, this guy is going to have arguably the biggest spotlight on him this coming season because he's going to start. Okay, he's going to start. It's virtually, you know, unless he goes in and runs a 4.8 40 or something. Cause I remember in the combine, you know, his 40 time was a little slow. But unless he goes in and doesn't have any football speed and loses what we saw at Notre Dame, because he was lights out at Notre Dame, I'll give him that. He's going to start. But this guy is going to have the spotlight on him, and I don't know that he's got to handle that spotlight. I just don't know that he's got it. He's got the on-field skills from what we saw in college. I will agree with the statement that he has the potential to be a very successful NFL quarterback. I'll agree with that. But with what he went through in the offseason and that spotlight on him this season, I just don't know. I look at Vince Young as someone who had so much talent and just withered under the spotlight and under the pressure. You know, yeah. National champion and just withered under it. And I'm wondering, are we going to see the same thing with Tao? I don't know. I'm hoping we don't, but I'm wondering. K-Star, thoughts?
I'm not really worried about Tao, man. I mean, to me, he's a good instinctive player. And with him going to San Diego, apparently that's close to his home, where his family is and everything, which, you know, should provide him some comfort. With the surroundings, which always helps. But, I mean, he's a really good football player. Like, people point out that one bad game he had versus Alabama, but the matter is Notre Dame played quite a tough schedule anyway, filled with good opponents such as Stanford, and he was amazing. He was the pillar of, you know, why Notre Dame was so successful last year. It was because of, mainly due to Monte Tile's leadership and playmaking ability on the defensive side of the ball. So I think he'll have a pretty good, hopefully, career in San Diego. But he definitely will have the pressure. He definitely will have the spotlight. But, again, it's much better for him to go to a place like San Diego than, like, New York or a place where it's very media frenzy. San Diego's a smaller football market. Kind of low-key. You don't really hear too much going on around there. That might change the tail there, but I really doubt it does. So I think it's a pretty good landing spot for him.
I guess we will see. My concern remains intact. I don't know that he's going to have the ability to withstand. I mean, at least, you know, that's a decent media market, but at least he's not going to play for, you know, some of the larger media markets out there, some of the larger, you know, more visible franchise. I think the Chargers are not, you know, they're not at that level at this point in time. You know, I don't think it's been years since they've been a Super Bowl. We'll see. I'm concerned. I hope he does well, though. I hope he does well. But I just hope he stays off those internet dating sites. That's all I'm saying. All right. as we move forward to kind of wrap up the show, Dr. Train, any last comments or thoughts about the draft, about the schedule, about your team? Is any random thoughts before we get out of here?
I guess the only thing is I'm still excited about what Chicago will do next season because I just don't know what it's going to look like. You hope the defense doesn't fall away because it's not under Lovie Smith anymore, and you finally hope the offense shows up because it's under a new head coach. So I like what we did in the draft. The one thing I will say, the one thing I do love about the draft, more than anything, is that all the analysts with their mock drafts, they're always wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I just love it. Wrong. You have no idea what these teams are thinking, who they want, and what they want to get. That's the beautiful thing about football.
All right. K-Star, any last thoughts or comments?
I'm really very, very, very excited about the Steelers draft and, you know, our future going forward. Can't wait to get my Jarvis Jones jersey. This guy was such a monster in Georgia. Again, he led the SEC in sacks. And I'm just really excited about this upcoming season, which is very far away. But, you know, you're right. When the NFL draft does launch and take place and come to fruition, it does feel like it's the start officially of the new year.
I have a couple of comments. The first comment is a sports related one. I don't know if anybody saw the fight last night, UFC fight, but John Bones Jones is the man. Guy breaks his toe in a horrid. If you saw it, it was like ugh, like it was like the toe was broken and like out of joint. It was just nasty, and still beat the crap out of Chael Sonnen in the first round. I mean, just took him out. And Sonnen's no joke, but Bones made him just look just sickening. It was just bad. And he beat him on the ground. He beat him wrestling. And that's not his game, but he wanted to show people that, yeah, I can do whatever I want in this ring. Unbelievable. If you haven't checked it, catch the replay. Heck of a fight. But the main thing I wanted to say was, we are here at the Madden Voice, a discussion, sometimes debate, from a fan's point of view. We are not sports writers. We are not former players or former NFL stars or anything like that. We sit at home just like you guys. We watch the games. We get on our technologies and follow our teams and follow the NFL. And we're just, we're diehard fanatics, if you will, but with this game. And so we come at it from a very unique perspective, and we hope that we can continue to share that with you as long as we're as well-received as we are. But I got to tell you, my appetite for First Take is wearing a little thin. I'm not enjoying it like I used to. And I think the more that I do this with these two esteemed colleagues of mine, the more I can appreciate how different we are from them. It seems to me that their positions change with the weather. It seems to me that, they have a position, it's almost regurgitation. I mean, I've been watching the show and I get tired of hearing how many times can you talk about Kobe Bryant tweeting from the sidelines during a basketball game? Who cares? So what? You talk about it once and you move on. Not only do they talk about it 3 days in a row, they talk about it twice. They're doing a topic in the morning. I mean, they're doing a topic between 10 and 11, and in between 11 and 12, they come back and asking the same question all over again. What? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to disrespect them. But I'm just saying this show doesn't do it for me like it used to. Maybe I'm just appreciating what the Madden Voice has and our unique spin on it. But I no longer run. As a matter of fact, I've been deleting shows. I don't even watch every show anymore. It just doesn't intrigue me. It doesn't hit my button like it used to. I love that show. I used to kill to see that show. I can't wait to see Stephen A. and Skip go at it again and again and again. But, now it's, I don't know. And I think sometimes their positions are based on sensationalism, based on ratings, based on, what is it that we can disagree on so we can argue so more people will tune in, as opposed to truly how they believe. And for crying out loud, how many pro football teams can Stephen A. Smith be a fan of? He's a New York fan, so he likes the Giants and he likes the Jets. But he grew up as a Steelers fan, so they're his Steelers. But he likes the Packers because Aaron Rodgers is a bad man. I mean, really? We like one team. You guys know who we like. And when we have a position, it's based on our loyalty to our team or based on our understanding of the NFL facts. That's it. I don't know, guys. Maybe it's just me, but I would encourage your friends, your family, and anybody you know that loves First Take, keep watching First Take. I'm not in competition with them. They're ESPN, the worldwide leader in sports. ESPN is 10 minutes from my house. I can literally, I mean, it's a long walk, but I can drive to ESPN and be there in 10 minutes. That's how close it is to me. I pass it almost every day. I see ESPN. I know the building well. I remember when it was built in 1979, okay? So I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not, they're the big guys. They're the conglomerates. They're the mega network, you know, millions and millions and millions of viewers and listeners. And we're not there, so I get it. They're Goliath and we're David. But I'm just being real with you. I'm not feeling it like I used to for them. Something's just not right there. There's just something's disintegrating before our eyes. Something's falling apart with their formula. And I just keep watching. Just keep watching them because you're going to see something. I don't know what just yet, but we're going to reference this show done on April 28th, and you guys are going to say, Commissioner T, he was clairvoyant. He saw something that we didn't see. Mark my words, something's off over there. Something's off. And those are my final comments of the day. With that, I want to thank Dr. Train. I want to thank K-Star. I suggest that we try to come back sometime in May and do a show. We'll get back to you on when, but we'll try to do one show. I think we should do one. If you guys disagree, you can. But I think until things ramp up again, maybe one show a month. Recap what's been going on, what's the latest news buzz going on in the NFL, what's our position, one show in May, and maybe nothing in June, and then July, a couple of shows, and then August, we're back full speed. So I think that's kind of what do you guys think? That makes sense?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
No problem with that.
Okay.
There's always right. Something going on.
Yeah, and clearly breaking news, I mean, if something mega happens, you know, Tony Romo gets traded to Pittsburgh and for a Ben Roethlisberger, and so now Romo is the Steelers' starting quarterback and Roethlisberger is the Cowboys' starting quarterback. I mean, we'll be on the air within 24 hours, okay? we'll be on the air real quick if it's something major that happens. Oh, you know what? There is one more thing before we say goodbye. Let me ask K-Star. Oh my God! Barry Sanders beats out Adrian Peterson. Cover of Madden 25. Like it? Don't like it? Agree? Disagree?
I like it, but I think that might have been pre-orchestrated only because I think it's very interesting that with Madden 25, Madden 25th anniversary, of course, an old school player beats out somehow Adrian Peterson. But I do like Barry Sanders as his voice. You know, I'm actually kind of was rooting for the whole way, like an old school player win, just because, I mean, how many opportunities are they really going to get? But it seemed a little fishy. That's okay. I like it.
Who's the better running back, Sanders or Peterson?
Sanders, but Peterson's career's not over yet.
Okay. Train, who's the better running back, Sanders or Peterson?
Sanders, dude.
It's unanimous. Funny you say all day, and that's Peterson's nickname. But,
That's
it's unanimous. Sanders, hands down. But you're right. Peterson still has some years ahead of him, and he could change our mind because he has the potential to be the best ever.
Yeah, he is
special. He is special. And right now, I take Barry Sanders hands down over Adrian Peterson just because number one reason is Barry did it pretty much by himself. 15,000 yards in 10 years with very little help. And yeah, and I watched it because I was, you know, a lot of that was Emmitt Smith's heyday too. And so it was always watching, you know, Emmitt Barry. And I love Emmitt, but he had a little bit more help than Barry did, you know. So, yeah, I'd take Barry hands down. All right. Hey, it's nice to end on a note that we all agree on. Barry Sanders over Adrian Peterson. All right. Listen, we'll see you guys sometime in May. Check out our Facebook page, The Madden Voice. Send us a tweet, The Madden Voice. Oh, wait a minute. Somebody wants to get on just before we sign off. I tell you guys love us so much, we can never get off the air. Someone has to get a last comment in, so let's go ahead and bring this person in before we say goodbye. 901 area code, welcome to The Madden Voice.
Hello?
Yes. You're live on The Madden Voice.
Yeah, I've been listening to the whole show. I'm at work, so I couldn't jump in. Train is one of my partners. We went to college together. So I've been listening to enjoying all the commentary. Throwing my 49ers in there as an A grade as well. So just wanted to let you guys know, keep doing what you're doing. We're enjoying it.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. We always love positive comments.
Thank you.
Well, your partner Train is a big part of the show. I mean, without him, the show wouldn't be what it is today. So we appreciate the support and the love.
All right. Out of here.
All right. Take care.
Wow.
Hey, there you go, Train. There you go, man. You know what I'm saying? Pretty soon it's going to be the Dr. Train show. Me and K-Star are going to be standing looking at each other like, hey, man, you know. Maybe we don't even. Yeah. We'll start taking some nights off, man, and just letting you run with it, bro.
Yeah, right. All
right. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. All right. So on that note, with a positive way to end the show, check us out on Facebook, The Madden Voice. Send us a tweet, The Madden Voice. You know, Facebook, website, TheMaddenVoice.com. Keep in touch with us, Commissioner T, K-Star, Ali Quick on Twitter. And Train is, well, he's on Twitter. Just send me a tweet, The Madden Voice. I'll send you Train's Twitter. Well, we'd love to hear from you guys. We appreciate the love. We appreciate the support. We'll see you sometime next month. And in about 3 months, NFL season will start. We're counting down because, as you know, when the season kicks in and the games begin, all the feuds will be settled on the field. Good night, everybody.